Yeah, Paul has been coming to us since 1992, when they were still not complexity seminars. We were then looking at strategy, particularly between IT and business. And one of the things I think Paul has done absolutely brilliantly when he was the was to create an environment where he achieved a very high degree of alignment between the IT team and the business. And I think that that is what you will describe to us, Paul.
All right. Thank you very much, Eve. No doubt you'll tell me when I'm getting near to my 45 minutes. Perhaps all of you will be telling me, because I'm standing between you and the wine over there. And I notice you're nearer the wine than me, which is a bit unfair, isn't it? But thank you to all of you who are still here. I notice half the audience got up and left. I don't know whether that's the time or just my slides they looked at. I'm going to talk about leadership and complexity. I've called it aligning IT with business. So let me reassure you, I'm not going to talk about IT. I don't know much about IT, although I was head of IT at GlaxoSmithKline. And that's really what I want to tell you about. This is going to be my story. So I should say a couple of things. First of all, although Eve very kindly says I've been attending her seminars for a long time, I don't know much about complexity. What I am going to do is to tell you a bit of story and then tell you my view of how my story has some complexity stuff in it. And I'll do that a few points in my story. So the other thing I should say is the company I'm talking about is GlaxoSmithKline, a big pharmaceutical company, but I'm only talking about the UK bit of it. So that's only a small fraction of the whole thing. It's about £1 billion business, so it's quite big in, you know, terms of businesses, but in terms of Glaxo, it's something under 4% of the company, so it's just a little bit of it. And I want to start off by saying something about what happened with what I did. To start with, you must understand I didn't have all these great complexity ideas in my mind and go off and do something. I did what seemed natural to do just from my experience of 20 years working as a manager in IT. And afterwards, we tried to do other things with it and couldn't do it. And Eve came along and said, oh, well, you do realise this is all about complexity. Just to be clear, I just did this because it seemed like the right thing to do. I now realise why it was the right thing to do, which fits in with the stories that Eve was talking about. And this was why it was the right thing to do, because this is what happened. And you can see here, the first thing is IT became recognised as contributing a huge amount to sales. So up until then, IT was just seen as a cost. You know, why are we wasting all this money on computer stuff? I suppose we have to do it, but if we could reduce it to nothing, that would be really good. Well, by the end of this, we had shown how IT was delivering tens of millions of pounds a year extra sales as a result of its use. The second thing is that at the same time, we had reduced the cost of IT by about 75%. So that's pretty unusual combination, actually. Usually when IT people say they're going to do something dramatic to a company, first of all, they don't do it. But secondly, they want a lot of money to do it. Well, we actually said we're going to reduce the cost of IT and do this at the same time. Now, I have to tell you, this was after a merger. So I am cheating a bit because I had the two biggest pharmaceutical companies in the country coming together, so straight away I can make 50% saving. So it looks good, but it's not quite as good as it looks then. But more important than that, the outcome of all this stuff was that IT people themselves in the company feel much more valued. So they feel now that they can make a real difference to the company. They're no longer just people stuck down in the bottom of the building who fiddle around with computers and nobody really knows what they do and they're not really part of the company. They now really feel, because of the top things, that they can make a real difference to the company. So what did we do? Well, as I say, I'm going to try and tell it a bit the way that I did it. So this is just happens to be what I thought. When I was asked to take on this job, first thing I thought was, well, I've got to create a new organisation. What does an IT organisation need? Are all sorts of things published, you know, in, oh, I shouldn't say an academic thing, should I hear? There are all sorts of things published that you can go and copy if you want, but it's all a bit academic. I actually thought, well, in my experience, this is what IT functions do. They have some kind of thing that's about strategy and architecture, and I'm going to say more about these, most of these things in a minute. They have some kind of projects that they have to deliver. You've all heard about IT projects, usually not in a flattering way, I'm sure. Once you've done a project, you have systems that you have to support, and that what I call service delivery. And in delivering that service, the people who are engaged in it should be learning more about the business. So they gain a greater business understanding, which then allows you to create a better strategy, and so you have what I call my virtuous circle. So I want to tell you, so that's what I thought. I thought, well, if that's what we have to do, that's how I'm going to organise my IT function, and that is how I organised it. I had directors of IT for each of these things. So I'm going to talk about what I mean by these things now. So first thing I want to talk about is strategy and architecture. So we've heard lots about this already today. Actually, you've heard from people who are far more eminent than I am as a mere IT person to talk about this. But I just want to say what we did about strategy. So so I have to tell my strategy story here. So one of the things I came to that Eve had organised in the early days, before complexity had been thought about, Eve used to run seminars called strategy seminars. And it was held, oh, not in this building, in the old building. What was that room called you used to have?
Vera Anstey room.
That's right, Vera Anstey room. Always used to be held in there. She tells me it's too expensive or something now, so we never go in there. But I remember being sitting around a table, there were about 15 people, I suppose, there, and whoever was doing the talk, I can't remember who was talking about strategy, said something like, you know, well, you obviously all know about something about strategy, or you wouldn't be sitting around this table, because this is about strategy. So I want you all to write down what strategy is. So we all wrote, this is a mixture of academics and business people, we all wrote down what we knew strategy was. Then we all had to read them out. Of course, 15 different meanings of strategy. So I always like to learn something when I go to events like this and seminars and so on. And the thing I learnt that day is strategy is whatever you want it to be, right? And this is what I want it to be. So this is strategy today. And for me, an IT strategy, which is what I was trying to create, is about mixing together business, some business understanding, and some what I've called IT context. So as I've said, GSK, I'm talking about the UK part of GSK. Well, there's a global part, and they do all sorts of IT stuff in the global part of GSK, and I might as well use it. So I need to understand the context, in this case, the rest of GSK. To bring it together into an IT strategy. And down at the bottom I've put architecture is what we used to think of as an IT strategy. And I put that because when I came into the job I said to the two companies, they had two IT functions, big IT functions, can I see your IT strategy? And what I got were big documents, pretty impressive. Actually the one from Glaxo was a later version of one I'd created many years before. Anyway, it was a list of technologies. That's basically what it was and how they fitted. And both of them were like that. Well, that's what I call an architecture, and I wasn't really greatly interested in that. That was for other people in my function to look after, and they're much more expert in technology than I was. And incidentally, the rule about architecture was simply, I only want one of each, because funnily enough, we had two of each because I've just got two companies. Actually, we had much more than that. We had about five of each because everybody had duplicated everything and so on. So that was a strategy. Now I'm going to say a bit more about what it really looked like. So what I've done is we have this thing, I've called it an ambition. Earlier on we heard about a vision or a mission statement. You can call it what you like, it's a similar kind of thing. And in order to achieve that ambition, there are some challenges, otherwise you would already have done it. So there must be some challenges that you want to overcome. And the reason that I used this approach actually was not because it was my version of strategy, but it was because I'd already sat with the other members of the management team in the business creating the strategy for the whole company. And this is how we did it. So I thought, well, we'll use the same method in IT. Everyone will understand what we're doing. And, oh no, where's my beautiful red bit gone? Oh, what happens if I do it again? Oh no, that doesn't work. Oh well, I usually have this in a lovely red thing that looks really impressive. This is a bit pathetic now. This is the LSE computers, you see. They miss out half my graphics. Our goal or ambition between 2001 and 2004 didn't change. What it was to ensure that GSK UK Pharma gets more value from IT than other people, okay? And you might say, well, oh, that's great. You know, I mean, anybody could write that. Well, yes, they could. The point is not what you write, it's what you do with it. And that's actually, this is back to communications, which, again, we've talked about a lot already today. So my job was to communicate this to everyone in the IT function so that they understood what it meant. And the kind of thing I used to say, and Kieran will probably remember this in endless detail, to ensure that GSK UK Pharma gets more value from something is not about building IT systems. So this is to the IT function. I'm suddenly telling them it's not about building IT systems. Because you can do that without building any IT systems, because I've already got two of everything at least, so why do I need more? Well, actually, we do. Things change and technology changes, business changes and so on, so you do still need to do it in reality. But that's not what this message says. Second thing about this is value. So somebody else was talking about value earlier on today. I can't remember if it was in a talk or to me privately. But anyway, value, the point is, what does value mean? And value means whatever it needs to mean in your particular context. So in our context, we're in the commercial part of Glaxo. Value is about either increasing sales or decreasing cost. It's not about anything else. And you might say, well, that's a bit obvious, isn't it? I mean, in any commercial organisation, that's what it'd be about. Well, I don't know how many systems we ended up getting rid of, 800 or something in the first year. It was hundreds and hundreds of systems which were not doing that. They were not increasing sales or decreasing costs. So between the two companies, we'd spent tens of millions building systems that were a complete waste of money. So it's really important that people understand what that means. And then this thing about being better than other people, well, you would only know that if you measured something. And I might say something about measures. I can't remember what slides I put in here, but I might say something about measures later on. The other thing I want is somebody earlier on said you have to communicate a simple message. You know, so my thing about what does value mean, we're only going to invest money in IT if it increases sales or decreases cost. Well, that's really simple, isn't it? Of course, nobody believed me when I said that, so it took a year or two of me saying, we're not doing this, for people to believe that we weren't going to do the wrong things anymore. But of course, it's not true either, because we have to do regulatory things. So a lot of the things that I make simple to get messages across aren't entirely true. And surprise, surprise, it doesn't really matter, because you're trying to get a simple message across. Right, so I've got my vision or ambition or whatever you want to call it. What challenges? Why weren't we already doing this? So these were the challenges that it wasn't me actually, it was a management team came up with these challenges. How can we ensure that we have people who do their best, basically? how can we continue to reduce the cost of IT? How can we embed our new IT processes? And how can we get the whole company, this is not just IT, how can we get the whole company to exploit IT more effectively? Now, you see in this, there is really only one thing that is an IT thing. It's about how can we embed our IT processes. But this is our IT strategy. And this is about what people do. It's not about IT. It's not about technology, really. And you might say, well, again, load of words, you know, that's great. The real point is what we did with this, which was to say, well, this isn't what the managers are going to do. This is about bringing together people from across the IT function and asking them to come up with the ideas of how to address these challenges. And that's what we did. We put people into teams to address the challenges. And I've got one example here, which is about reducing the cost of IT, which got turned into a game called Score It. And you might say, game at work? Surely not. Well, one of the other things we wanted to try and do was to have some fun. We wanted to make work feel more like fun than a boring thing you come and do and then go home and who cares, you know. But you can imagine what happened when I stood up in front of the IT function and said to them, well, one of our challenges is to reduce the cost of IT. I mean, what does everyone immediately think you're going to do? They've got a new boss and he comes in and says, well, what we've decided to do is reduce the cost of IT. They're all immediately sitting there thinking, oh, blow, he's going to make us redundant. Well, we didn't do that. And what we actually did was involve them all in coming up with the ideas of how to address this one. Everyone was put into a team, and this was like a football game that somebody had invented. It wasn't me, but somebody had. So we had a goal that was, you know, a bit of cardboard that somebody had got a goal painted on, and we had some footballs that could go in the goal and things like that. And people went off and did things like creating T-shirts so their team all looked the same and that kind of thing. And the second point's quite interesting. Who were the leaders of these teams, talking about leadership? Well, teams chose the leaders. And interestingly enough, they didn't choose the sort of most senior people in the hierarchy. I don't know how they did it, but certainly in one team, we had one of the most junior people in the department as the leader of the team. And he did a really good job, actually. He surprised us as the managers of the function. He surprised us with what he could do. And people came up with ideas about how we could reduce cost, and they could win prizes like bottles of champagne or whatever every so often. And after we'd been doing it for a few months, we had a party. Because we're having fun, remember, so we like having parties. And the consequence of this was that everyone felt involved in this dreadful thing of reducing the cost of IT. And guess what? They didn't come up with making each other redundant or anything like that. They actually found sensible things that they knew they were doing that we didn't really know how they were doing it, that they could do better or in different ways and save money or stop doing, actually. And it was effective. We reduced the spend by about 15% as a result of this activity for the next year. So, here we are, complexity perspective. So there we are. I've talked a bit about strategy and architecture here. So what does strategy do? Well, what I think it does is to define what Eve calls the fitness landscape. You remember the bouncy castle? I call it a bouncy castle. Because actually the bouncy castle works quite well, if you think about it, because if somebody jumps on it, all the bumps go in different places, and that's what happens when the environment changes. So you might be at the top of the bump, and when somebody's jumped on it, actually your now bump is down at the bottom. But anyway, the strategy defines the fitness landscape. It's kind of the field in which you're going to play. The sort of teams and so on that we formed facilitated connectivity, so getting people to work together And you might say, well, that's a pretty obvious thing to do. But you'll be surprised, even in a fairly small function, how people like to keep in their own little departments and so on, and don't talk to each other and don't share ideas, as Leslie pointed out. There was co-evolution within the IT function. So as one group was changing, so it was affecting another, and there was this reciprocal change going on. The space of possibilities was explored. Well, that's pretty obvious. All of these teams were trying to come up with ideas and what have you. And of course, they came up with many more ideas than I could have come up with, or than me and the management team could have come up with. After all, there were 100, more 120, 150 of them, and there's one of me, or five or six of the management team. You know, where do you think the ideas are going to come from? And obviously, this was an attempt to facilitate an innovative environment. So that's my complexity bit. And this is my leadership bit. So each of these, I've tried to think, well, what relevance has this got to leadership? Well, this is about, I think actually this has been said so many times already today that it's rather preempted my slide. But leaders define the environment in which people are encouraged to make their own contributions. That will be my sort of take on this. So now I just want to say a few words about projects. So these again are just my sort of views of projects. So when I, well, just first thing to say is my kind of little snippet was there is no such thing as an IT project. And that might or might not be true, but it's another one of these simple statements that have profound effects on people. So the commercial, my commercial colleagues, you know, the other vice presidents of commercial functions, were really excited about the idea that I said this. There is no such thing as an IT project. And it was like, at last we've got somebody who really understands that they just do what we tell them. Well, the thing that they hadn't understood at the time was there were other consequences of this statement. Now, the way that IT expenditure gets justified is by the IT director standing up in front of the board every year and saying, I need to spend X million, tens of millions, whatever it is, on IT. Well, I said, you know, that doesn't seem right to me because none of these are IT projects. I don't quite see why I should justify any of these expenditures. You're going to have to justify them. I'll stand up and say we're going to do these projects, but when anybody asks why are we doing them, you're going to have to explain it. And if you don't, we're not going to do it, because I'm happy to cut my budget. And that worked really well, actually. And you might think, well, that's a bit strange. You know, surely you need all these sophisticated ways of justifying all this expenditure and so on. Well, not really, no. I mean, I sat round the board table every month and we decided to do things, and if we needed an extra sales force, we'd just say, okay, that seems like a good idea, it's only 2 million. So why, when it's a £500,000 IT project, would we make such a song and dance about it? And actually, when we looked at it in the context of IT being part of a bigger commercial project, the IT costs were much less than half of the total cost of the project. So it suddenly makes a lot more sense to sit around and just say, well, it's a commercial project we want to do, you justify it. The project management. Now, you were always hearing about how IT projects fail, but I'll come back to what that means in a minute. But one thing that was very obvious to me was we did not have professional project managers. The way that we were running projects was to say, well, we've got this big project, could be a European project. So, you know, £20 million project, well, we really need a business person to lead this project. So what we'll do is, oh, I know, you're doing marketing, aren't you? Well, you must be a business person then. Okay, tomorrow you will become the project manager for this £20 million project that's going to be run across Europe. Well, I'm sorry, why would you be surprised if the project fails if you do things like that? I mean, project management is a really professional activity and people need to be properly trained. So actually, I got some learnings from civil engineering. I must say it wasn't a very pleasant experience because of the person involved, but anyway, I won't go into that. They have very professional methods of running projects. So I said, well, let's learn from them and create a course where we can train people, create professional project managers, and actually we, the IT function, can become the experts in IT, in project management, which we did. And we then went and advised people in the commercial areas and so on how to do project management. Large projects usually fail, so this is about projects failing. And I haven't got time to go into it here, but I think there's a big story to be told about complexity and projects and so on, and how projects are pretty much bound to fail, actually. But I won't go into that here. But one thing that people do is measure projects on cost, time, quality, or functionality in IT terms, that would be. And almost always projects fail on one of these. And actually I say, well, if you choose the right projects, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the sort of projects that we would try to invest in would be making us 10 times the cost of the project in return quite quickly. So why would we care if it cost us twice as much? I mean, we might care if it took twice as long, because if we knew we were going to make a big return, we want to do it as quickly as possible. So actually it might be better if it cost twice as much, because I can do it twice as fast. I would just say these measures, cost, time and quality, whilst they're interesting when you're running projects, are the wrong measure for the project. What you really want to be measuring is what return you're going to get on your investment, and be tracking that properly. One thing we did learn, though, was if you break up big projects, you can usually deliver them in chunks. That point I won't bother with. A measurement of project progress. So this is an interesting thing. Must be seen as supportive, not punitive. Incidentally, you'll understand that all these things apply to every function. It's not just about IT, this is true of anything you're doing. Right, when I first got into this job, one of the things I said was, after we'd been going for a little while, I want a list of all the projects that we're doing, because we're doing a merger, so we're doing a massive number of projects, and I want to know whether they're red, green or amber. You know, green is good, red is bad, and that's enough for me. I just want to know that. So it all gets collected together. We have a meeting, it's presented to me. Every single project is green. So I say, so you mean there's no problem with any IT project in this department then? Well, they're all going all right. So, well, you must have too much resource then. So if I take the resource away, that will save us some money. Oh, I don't know about that. I said, well, you know, I don't really believe this. Let's do a bit more analysis and find out. Go away and find out and come back and tell me what's really happening. So they did, and they came back. And, of course, in the meantime, I've been trying to think, well, why does everybody say that everything's perfect? Of course, the answer was, our experience was, if they said anything was going wrong, they got made to feel stupid. We heard about it this morning. You know, you punish people by making them feel stupid. Well, if you do that, why are they going to tell you that there's any problem? I certainly wouldn't. I'll put mine green as well. I'll wait till the very last minute before I said, well, actually, there's a bit of a problem here, which is exactly what everyone was doing. So anyway, they came back with some ambers and maybe one or two reds. And I said, well, now I know. What we've got to do is put more resources into these reds and ambers, the ones that really matter. We're going to help those people. So actually it became, if you tell Paul that something's going wrong, he'll try and find a way to help you. So instead of being you get punished, you actually, in a way, get rewarded. I would think reward might be the wrong thing. But at least you get help if things are going wrong. And that really helped to get projects delivered when we wanted them delivered. So, complexity. Right, first thing to understand, of course, is that projects are the means, generally, in companies by which the company, the organisation, responds to the changes in the environment. You undertake some project to change things. The second thing was this idea about not being such a thing as an IT project helped to drive interdependency and connectivity, because the commercial people really like this idea. Suddenly it's their projects. Well, they liked it and hated it, because of course now if anything went wrong it wasn't just IT, but it helped got people really working together to try to solve the problems instead of blaming each other. And of course there was a lot of feedback going on, so that fits in very nicely with the complexity ideas. And I've just a point I want to make. I don't know that this has got anything to do with complexity, but it might have, because I put the word interaction in it. But I just say projects are more about the interaction of people, which is what makes them complex systems, actually, in my opinion. And there has been some published work. We had a speaker from EVE arranged a couple of years ago now who talked about projects from a complexity point of view. And that would help explain why it's so difficult to predict what's going to happen in projects, actually. But it's not really about the creation of things. Everybody imagines project is about the creation of a thing. I don't really think that's the important point. I think the important point is about the interaction of people. And from a leader's point of view, if that's true, then leaders have got to recognise that projects are usually about changing a complex environment and are therefore inherently unpredictable. So it's not surprising that people can't predict what's going to happen. And it's back to somebody was standing up here and saying, I think it was Eve actually, this is what people do with projects. They go, oh, well, it didn't work last time, but if we just tried harder, it will work better next time. So they invent another methodology, that's what we like doing, because that will solve the problem. And the cleverest people in the world have been trying to invent methodologies to solve this problem for God knows how long, and haven't solved it yet. So I'm pretty unconvinced that that's going to solve the problem, and it doesn't stop everyone trying. Right, service delivery now. Am I running out of time here, Eve, or am I still all right?
You've got 10 minutes, but then
that's,
you wouldn't have allowed any time for questions.
All right, so there we are, got 25 minutes. 10 minutes. This is a graph. Right, so what's this value? So this is value to the organisation. So in my terms, this will be either increasing sales or decreasing cost with time. And this is some business process, some imaginary business process, and it's creating some value for the organisation. And we decide we want to improve this business process, make a change, and I assume that means improve it. Some people make changes and things get worse, but that's not meant to happen. So we undertake a project, and we implement the project. There it says implementation. And of course, usually what happens is you get some kind of dip in the value being returned. And this is the sort of change management area. You're changing the way people work and so on. They don't quite know what to do. But hopefully, and usually, what happens is, you know, the value increases and we end the project where this line is here and we think, that's fantastic, we've measured it and we've really done a good job here. So we'll have another party, because we like parties, and then we'll break up the project team and that's it, you know, we've done our job. Well, I can't quite remember how this came about, but for some reason or another, we decided to start measuring what happened after all that, after a project had finished. And we found in almost every case, what happened was this line dropped back down to what was the value before we'd undertaken the project. In other words, the project was of limited value. I mean, we got some value under the curve here, but of limited value. So we decided, as part of the change in the way we were working in IT, to address this issue. And we said, fairly sensibly, who are the only people who are keeping an eye on these projects, because they involve a lot of IT by definition? They're the IT people. So we're actually going to change the job of people in IT, and their job is going to become making sure that we continue to get the value from the project that was undertaken even though the people who are using the system are not IT people, they're business users of some kind. Now you can imagine the kind of cultural shift that took. And the people who had to do this were the people who were the directors of IT. So this is something Kieran had to go out and do. He had to go out to an area of the business, I can't remember which one he was in charge of, probably the most difficult one if I know anything, and say to them, you're not doing your job properly, in the politest possible way, because look what's happened. You've let this fall down to nothing. And that you're wasting the company's money, we're going to turn the system off, and that's the end of it. So we had to find a way of doing that that was a bit less confrontational than I've just described. In fact, we set up groups called service boards, whose job was to look at the value that was being derived from the IT investment and to make sure that they continued to get some value from it. And that worked really well, really effectively. But it totally changed the culture of IT and actually the culture of the whole business. Because suddenly IT is taking an active part in the way our business is running. Oh yes, here we are, measures. Right. So if you want to know what value you're getting, you're going to have to measure it. You can't get away from it. You do have to measure things sometimes. I hate to say it, but sometimes you have to measure things to know what's going on. But measures, which are these measures are being done by the IT department, remember, have to focus on the business value, not on IT. I expect that's what it says next. Oh yes, IT measures are secondary. IT people are really good at measuring things, IT things, and they measure hundreds of them. You go and look on the GSK intranet, there must be thousands of measures, or there used to be, I don't know if it's changed since I left, but there used to be thousands of measures of IT things. But we're not an IT company, surprise, surprise, we're a pharmaceutical company. So what we want to measure are pharmaceutical things. And why is that? Well, you know, why? If we have ITs working perfectly, why isn't everyone happy? Surely, that would be the view of IT. We've measured IT, it's all working perfectly, so everyone must be happy. So why are they whinging, would be the sort of discussion. And I went to Cranfield University for a talk one day, and somebody put this slide up, so I nicked it. So I'm probably not allowed to, but I thought this describes perfectly what's happening here. This is about operations management, so nothing to do with IT, but this was about customers and businesses working together. And I thought, well, this is absolutely it, you know. What the customer pays for, or what the user pays for, this is the IT view of the world. We measure all these sorts of things. And we think, well, it's perfect because it's all working perfectly. But actually, what the user's looking for, what the business is looking for, are things like this. And if they're not getting those, then it doesn't matter how well this stuff's going. It's a waste of money. So we have to measure these things. Right. So you might say, well, that's a very nice theory, but I was going to tell you my story. So I've got what actually happened, and you don't really need to know what this thing means. But what you can see down here is that's a measure of value, and they were doing this stuff that gave almost no value. So these were salespeople doing this stuff. So we put in a computer system, and hallelujah, huge increase in the value being derived from this activity. But what happened? It starts going down. This is exactly as I described. So this is probably Kieran had to talk to them and say, you know, what's happening here? This is exactly what we said would happen. You better do something about it, or Paul's going to make me turn this system off. And so they did. And hallelujah, look, this is perfect, isn't it? The trouble is, it doesn't stop there. It goes up and down and up and down, and you have to keep on fighting this. But I think you can see that gradually over the 2 or 3 years, whatever it is that's represented here, it does go up a bit, but it certainly doesn't drop right back down to nothing. So it really does work, this approach. And from a complexity perspective, well, this was about the service boards. You remember they were the groups we set up to monitor the usages. Co-evolution. So this was about the IT people learning about how our business was really working, and the business people learning about how IT people could work with them to make their business work better, and developing together. A lot of interdependence. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. You know, if you haven't got the computer system, you can't do the business process. If you haven't got the business process, why would you need the IT? But the big warning, which I'm sure you're all aware of, is measurement can be dangerous. You know, you measure things and people will respond to it. And if you want to make something better and you start measuring it, you'd better be aware that people are a hell of a lot cleverer than you are, and they'll find a way of making the measure look good, whether it really is or not. And we see that all the time, but seem to totally ignore it. I mean, the most amusing one was the idea of reducing waiting times with the NHS. Well, doctors immediately worked out that if they didn't put any patients on the waiting list, they've reduced the number of people on the waiting list. I mean, it doesn't take a genius, does it? So they just created a pre-waiting list, which wasn't being measured, basically. I mean, and things like people do that. The thing is, this is back to this thing, you know, if you punish people when measures are bad, that's what's going to happen. That the measures will never be bad, so you'll never know what's going on. And I think that's the point I make here. Yes, that's right. Punishing people when things go wrong is not a good idea, and we've heard a lot about that already today, so I'm not going to dwell on it, because Eve says I haven't got long. But the last sort of thing, last bit of my talk is about, well, it's not about those things really. So what is it about? And this is a little graph that I like using, and this can apply to any aspect of your business, and it's so simple it just seems that, you know, you can use it for all sorts of things. Breadth of business understanding, depth of personal relationship. This is a bit challenging for IT people down here, but we've taught them now that it's really important. You know, you can live down here if you want. You have pretty little business understanding, and why would you want to have any relationships with people? That sounds a bit people-y sort of thing. And lots of IT departments live down there. And why does that matter? Well, there are consequences. I mean, if you don't need much business understanding and you don't need to know many of the people in your business, why would you want to keep this activity in your business? India looms, you know, let's offshore it, that's what. Now, but there is a bigger problem than that. The bigger problem is that because some IT functions live down here, people offshore it. And then they find that, alleluia, they should have had some of their IT people doing this, but they've just got rid of them all. So they're in big trouble now because they have nobody who is providing the proper relationships with the business. And that applies to finance, HR, and any function you want to think of, especially support functions. I mean, that stuff down there is about basic IT requirements. You have to do that. If you can't do that, then, you know, you're not in business, really. The bit in the middle is about forming proper partnerships. But the most important thing, which lots of IT people don't really understand they should be doing, is about leadership. And when I'm talking about leadership here, I'm not talking about technical leadership or something. I'm talking about leadership of the business. There are some aspects of business that IT people can lead, just as marketing people can, or sales people can, or HR people can. So finally, to do more than just the basics, this is all about people and relationships. And really, this whole thing amounts to leadership. Clear and simple goal. Simple expression of the meaning of value. Measure value, not the easy to measure stuff. Allow things to emerge. We heard about emergence from Eve. Be flexible, engage everybody. I've called it risky management because the trouble is you don't know what's going to happen. Usually, really good things happen. but occasionally not very good things happen. I've talked about this. Relationship management, I think we've heard about a lot. I haven't had much time to talk about this one, be courageous. If you want to be a leader, you've got to stand up for what you believe in, and that means you have to tell people bad things sometimes. You know, you have to stand up in front of the board and say, if we're going to increase value with IT, I'm not going to invest money in finance and HR. So there's no more finance and HR systems, Mr. Finance and HR directors, because you've got systems, making them better won't improve the company anymore. Kieran has to go out and say to people, you're not doing your jobs properly, pull your socks up or we're taking the systems away. You know, you've got to be courageous. And unfortunately, you still have to do all the stuff that you used to do as well. So I'll just leave you with that message. Thank you very much.
So you were right, you only needed 45 minutes for the presentation, so now you've got your full amount for discussion.
Excellent. Oh dear, that means they're going to ask me questions. I'll better stay in here.
Okay.
Make two observations. Yes. I'm just looking at IT, I've obviously been doing this decades, but we've been doing a major research project at the moment about the future needs, capabilities and skills in the IT area. And that last diagram that you had is very interesting because we talk about breadth of business understanding and depth of personal relationship. And we're finding in the sort of matrix of skills and capabilities needed within the IT function that those two dimensions are needed virtually through every capability and skill. It's not restricted to leaders, it's not restricted to relationship managers. It's virtually everybody. There are very few in our analysis so far, and we've been looking at some very major global players, there are very few people who can just be technically very competent.
Yes. Oh yes, so I didn't make that clear. We actually called that our trusted advisor model, and we ran a program for several years with everybody in the department to get them to understand the importance of these two things and how they could would be better. So I completely agree with you.
Well, just to elaborate a little, I mean, we actually have three groupings now of capabilities and skills in our model that we're developing and published this year. But one is technical skills. The other one is change skills, and the other one is business stroke management skills. And we're talking about IT people, essentially. And surprise, surprise, even some of the technical people who are technically very competent have to have some of the other elements as well. This is an empirical analysis, as we're not making this up. This is, we go into corporations and we're saying, what are you having to utilize now? And it's actually quite a sea change when you look at what other people are talking about in terms of what you expect in the IT function, when we've mapped it completely. So actually, you know, the future is the breadth of business understanding and the depth of personal relationship virtually throughout the IT function. Mm. It's not, you know, that you're moving, you know, you can decide just to be one or two or three or four.
I mean, I completely agree with you. I would, and I see that going actually further, because I think more and more IT services are going to be delivered from outside organisations. So the people who are eventually, not right at the moment, but eventually the people who are left in organisations called IT will be the people who actually understand a business, have the relationships to be able to communicate with the people outside of the organisation what needs to be delivered.
But this applies to service supplier organisations too.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Which is why I like your idea of forming these boards or something, because that would be exactly akin to these things we call service boards, only between an outside organisation and an inside organisation.
And can I just put in one other thing, because it relates to the whole day, which is what we're learning, and I study a lot of outsourcing arrangements, is that usually they fail because the boundaries of what the organisation is are wrongly defined. And this is about redefining when you get relationships, collaboration and innovation, which you rarely do get in outsourcing arrangements, where you do get it, people have redefined the boundaries of the organisation, not as client and supplier, but in terms of what you're trying to achieve.
No, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that is why we now talk a lot more about the social ecosystem rather than the organisation in isolation, because you then have that constantly changing boundary depending what, which are the relationships you're actually focusing on.
There is a big cultural challenge, I would say, for organisations to actually do what you suggest. I mean, it sounds completely right to me. But for an organisation to get over the hurdle of having its procurement and legal people involved in all of these deals, which is what you're really talking about, because we're saying it's not really about the contract and the SLAs and all the other crap that goes with that, it's about forming a relationship or a partnership. That's a big move, actually. It's going to take brave people to stand up and make that happen.
So did you finish, Leslie, or did
you? Yeah, I know, I just felt some passion for that, those points.
Good, excellent, yes.
Yeah. I found that a really compelling story, Paul, about the transformation of an organisation. I'm curious as to, there must have been a number of occasions in that where you personally as a leader faced challenges and rocky moments, and I'm just wondering what for you was the biggest kind of challenge, hurdle or moments of truth? And what was it that you did as a leader? And I'm thinking about the red, gold, or the gold, green, and blue things we were looking at earlier on. What was it that you did that got you through that?
Attention to detail. No. That
so
happens to be.
Why do you like that? Because we know poor profile.
So, I mean, challenging moments, there are lots of them, you know. Honestly, standing up in front of my colleagues on the board and telling them, we are not going to do finance systems, we're not going to do HR systems, you know, you've got enough, you're not getting any more, we're not wasting any money on that. That, you know, was a quirt of, it got my heart beating, let's put it like that. Actually, they sat there deadly silent with all the commercial people nodding, so, you know, I was on a winner there. But that was a bit nerve-wracking. I mean, doing the merger itself, all the projects, I mean, it was a massive program of work. And I actually didn't know at the beginning whether we could do it, but we did, so that was good. You know, days when people told me, we can't do it. You know, my staff came and said, we can't do it, this is too difficult, it's too big, too complicated. And, you know, and then having to go out and show them how we could do it, even though I didn't have the vaguest idea, actually. But you just have to have confidence, and they did it. So I think, you know, that's what leadership's about, going out and trying to convince people they can do things which they don't think they can do.
I think that's a good way of putting it. Yes, I think you have.
Do you think that if you, I thought it was great as well, it's exactly what I've been dealing with in government, and a particular area of work I can't really talk too much about, is that there are particular views about how system engineering is done, which focuses on the bottom left-hand corner of your chart.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the tools and methods we use only represent the business in those terms.
Mm.
And when you come along and say, but we need this other stuff, they say it's not my process model, and so it's rejected. So did you feel that the merger created a disruptive environment which you were able to take advantage of?
Well, yes.
Stuffed?
I don't know about being stuffed, but that made it easier. There's no doubt about that, because it was new. I mean, it's exactly back to what Eve was saying before, you know, moving the system far from equilibrium. Well, that's what a merger does, because suddenly everybody's having to apply for their jobs and they're all a bit worried and that kind of thing. So, yes, it definitely makes it easier. Could you do it without it? Well, if you look at, you know, change management things, people always talk about you can't achieve a change unless you create a burning platform that people believe, incidentally, which is a bit they usually miss out, because people then invent things that nobody believes, and that's not a burning platform. So you have to, you know, construct some reason for a change to happen. But it can be done without a merger. Yeah.
Yes. In fact, an awful lot of people do try to push their organizations far from equilibrium without such an external perturbation. And sometimes it works, sometimes it goes over the other side and it goes too far. Comments, questions? Now I think everybody's ready for their wine now. So thank you very much, everyone, for coming and for staying to the very end. And as I said, any of you who want to hear more about it, we've got two courses coming plus the leadership program. So I'd like to see at least some of you again. And keep looking at our website because there will be other seminars as well, just a half day or one day next academic year. So thank you, Paul. And thank you, everyone.